Om Shanti. So this morning is quite a long session. We'll continue till 12 o'clock. And I'm going to, first of all, read you once again. You all heard today's Murli, but I'm going to read it to you again. And it'll be different because it's always different according to who reads it. And so we'll go through that, and then I'm going to take it apart, and we're going to go into the deep depth of the first 12 lines of the Sakar Murli that we heard today, and that will take us all the way till 12 o'clock. And then afterwards, I think it's fairly easy for you to get hold of Murlis, and if you have a copy, that's good. There are copies, I'm sure, in the global office. Try to practice to do something similar with the rest of it, and that will take you it'll probably take you about 5 days to analyze one Murli, and we get a new one every day. So such level of analysis of the Murli, you can only do it occasionally when you have that kind of time. But we're going to go through the process so that you have some ways that you can work with it in order to really extract the essence. Because the thing that really intoxicates the soul is the essence. So just as the people who make perfume, they need a lot of flowers to get a little bottle of perfume. And so the Murli is a big garden of flowers, and we will extract the essence, and it is that essence that really goes deep into the soul and carries us forward. So here we are. Today's Murli, 25th of March, and the essence, sweet children, you have to live with one another with a lot of spiritual love. So the first question to ask yourself is, what exactly is your personal definition of spiritual love? And you'll find that all of you have a different definition. And this is why people very often talk at cross purposes. So, never allow any conflict of opinion to come. And the Hindi for that is matbhed. Matbhed. Mat is your whole approach to ideas. So it's not just opinion, it's a whole lot more than that. It's your idea of what is right and wrong. It's your idea of what makes sense and what doesn't make sense. Your idea of what is logical, coherent, consistent, relevant, and valid, which usually does not coincide with somebody else's idea. So the whole thing about today's Murli is it teaches you consensus building. You know this word consensus? Consensus is when you do a lot of work with each other to arrive at agreement. It's very, very difficult to agree because we're all coming from very different angles. So the question is, what should each of you Brahmin children ask your heart? Your heart means the core of your soul, right? So the answer is, ask your heart, am I seated on Baba's heart, on God's heart? Secondly, to what extent have I imbibed divine virtues? So you have to think about what that is. Third, am I creating any obstacles in God's service? Well, that you could interpret in a million different ways, so we have to look at that also. Fourth, do I always live like milk and sugar? Probably not. It's probably better to have milk and honey, the land of milk and honey. How are we in sweet relationship with each other? Do I remain in unity with everyone? What is the meaning of unity? You all have a different idea about that also. And the last one, do I always follow Srimad? So there's also a lot of difference of opinion about what that is. So you can see that this is not quite so simple. And the song is, no one is like the innocent Lord. This word unique is used. Unique is the translation for Niyara. And Niyara does mean unique, but you cannot be unique so easily. Yes, please. Is it too fast? Oh. But you already heard all this once. We may have to stay here till 2 o'clock. Okay, I slow down. So, there's a song. No one is like Bholanath. Bholanath is different. You know that God is a non-human. You have to remember that. He's the father of the humans, but he himself is a non-human. Very important point. Om Shanti. Now you've already heard this one, so I'll go relatively fast. You children are the godly community, Ishwariya Sampraday. So if you want to know what you are, Baba proposes 3 identities. And none of them is organization. None of them. Sampraday is community. Parivar is family. And Kul is clan. So you're a family, a community, and a clan. Not an organization. Did you know that? Yes or no? Yes? Just a few. No, we're not an organization. We have an organization. An organization is a piece of paper that you give to the government and you follow certain rules, but it's not something that you can be. It's something that you have. But what you are, we're a community, a family, and a clan. Previously, you belonged to the devilish community. Sometimes people wonder, does Baba really mean devilish? And actually, he does. So, what is the definition of devilish? You see, so if you look up on Google Images, the Hindi word asur, which is also an English word, asur means a devil, and all the characteristics that you associate with a devil, with horns on the head and a tail with a horn on the end of it, or a little arrow, and, you know, big claws, and who causes a lot of damage. That's a devil. So there are a lot of humans like that. So Baba thinks that all of them are pretty much like that. And we all used to be maybe slightly not okay. Is that right? Slightly? And some of us slightly more. You can't really be a BK if in your prior to BK life you were seriously devilish, because it's a bit too much of a contrast. But there are some who try it. Anyway, so the devilish community does not know who the innocent Lord is. Now, that's a very strange sentence. So you have to see it in the context of the larger Murli, and it's connected with the song Bholanath. So the devilish community is non-religious, or at least non-spiritual. It may be, you can be religious and devilish, but you can't be spiritual and devilish. For example, you can kill people in the name of God. That's quite popular activity these days. So they do not understand that Shiva is different from Shankar, and Shankar is a deity, whereas Shiva is the father. So there's two different kinds of deity altogether. In fact, there are three different kinds of deity. And the Hindi word for deity is devta. And a devta actually literally means a giver. Somebody who has all the divine qualities and all the divine powers, they're givers, right? So when you are a normal human being, like we are now, we are takers. So the business world looks at us as consumers, so we are takers. So we used to be deities in the Golden Age. Now, Shankar was never in the Golden Age. Shankar is an image who is worshipped in the path of devotion. Shankar actually doesn't exist. And there's even Murlis in which Baba says that. Shankar is the template or representation or personification of the practice of yoga or the practice of bodilessness. That is Shankar. And he is called the destroyer because it is through this practice that you destroy your tendency to perform additional sins. That's Shankar. Then there's another kind of deity, which is something like the goddesses, you know, the Shiv Shaktis. So they belong to the confluence age. They're not golden age people, but they're still called deities because they have absorbed power from Shiva and they use that power to destroy the force of evil. So they are the third classification of deity. Are you following me okay? Yes? No? Yes? No. I'll tell you again. Three kinds of deity. One kind of deity is the people who live in the Golden Age. Okay? Golden Age people, they're called deities. Another kind of deity, Brahma, Vishnu, Shankar. I told about Shankar, but there's Brahma and Vishnu as well. So Brahma, when he is in Sakar form, he's not a deity. And he's called Prajapita Brahma. That means he is in an impure body, and he has been given the name Brahma by Shiv Baba, because he is his appointed instrument for Shiv Baba to enter in and speak Gyan and interact with BKs. Yeah? So that's Prajapita Brahma. Then there's Brahma, which is Avyakta Brahma. So Avyakta Brahma is pure, does not have an impure body. He has this subtle body which is purified because he is in his karmatit stage. So karmatit means there's no impurity. So he's in the subtle regions. Then there's Vishnu, who also doesn't exist, but who is a form of the perfect stage of Lakshmi and Narayan, who belong to the Golden Age. They are real, actual deities. And Vishnu is an image, and he's called a deity, but he doesn't exist except in people's minds or in God's mind. But you never see anybody walking around with four arms. That isn't, not a living, but you can see the form of Vishnu in visions in the subtle region. So that's one kind of deity. And then Shankar. So Brahma, Vishnu, Shankar is one kind of deity. Did you get it? Yes? Everybody put your hand up. If you didn't get it, you shouldn't be here in Madhuban. You're supposed to know these things. So, the third kind of deity is the Shiv Shaktis. That is basically the Dadis, who, through their Gyan Yoga Dharna, in their subtle form, using their minds, are able to seriously take power from Shiva and seriously destroy the force of evil, you see. So they're represented in the path of bhakti as the Shiv Shaktis, the goddesses, who are specially worshipped during the Navaratri time. Navaratri is the nine nights where it's just before Dashera, the day on which Ravan is burnt. So those are different kind of deities, right? And you might say there's even a fourth kind of deity who really doesn't exist, like Hanuman. There is nothing like Hanuman. But Hanuman, what is Hanuman? Hanuman is the representation of the human being who has the five vices, which is why he's shown as a monkey. And then you see the story, he opened up his heart and there was Ram inside. So that is also a memorial of Brahma Baba. Or by extension, a memorial of any body conscious human who became a BK because of love for God. That's Hanuman. Right? Or not? Yes? Yes? And then you have another one, Ganesh. Ganesh is very popular, but there isn't anyone like Ganesh. Doesn't exist as an actual person. But Ganesh is the child of Shiva, who of course had his head cut off. You see, it's not a very nice way to go around handling your children, right? But it's symbolic, you see. So all of us are children of Shiva, and we've had our egos cut off a number of times, right? And in place of your ego, you have an elephant's head. So an elephant's head is symbolic of somebody who has very little eyes. You don't look at things too much. You have big ears, you know what's going on. You have a big tummy, that means you have good power of accommodation. You have a long trunk. That means the trunk is your nose, right? So your nose is down and you're in your self-respect but not in your ego. And you have wisdom. That's Ganesh. You see? So these are deities in a sense, but they don't actually exist as actual deities like in the Golden Age. But they're worshipped. What is worshipped is the spiritual effort that we BKs do in the process of following Baba's direction. So that is all the different kinds of deities. So whenever Baba uses the word deity, you have to figure out immediately which one he's talking about. And for that you need your power of discernment. So they don't understand at all. The devilish community don't understand at all. And we understand because we study this every day for years and years and years, and gradually we understand. You are the godly community, Ishwarya Sampradaya. Ishwarya Sampradaya, you're the godly community because you belong to God, right? And all of us are connected with each other because we all say, yes, we are the children of God, and God is Shiv Baba, and that makes us the godly community. Yes? Are you? Yes, hardly anybody is. Yes. I need to know if you're following me, Izzy. So, that is the devilish family of Ravan. This is the godly family. There is a huge difference. So our mentality, our ideas, the way we live, the way we understand things, the way we think about life is different because we listen to the Murli and it has changed how we think. Yes? Yes? Oh no. Yes? Yes. Okay, thank you. Right. This is very small. I have to bring it a bit closer. Okay. So you are now in God's family and learning from God, not from anybody else, you're learning from God how there has to be spiritual love for one another. So we're learning from God how there has to be spiritual love for one another. So that is a very deep subject, and hardly any of us know what that means. So our whole study is, what exactly is love? What is the difference between love and attachment? What is love and what is not love? And exactly how is the right way for us to think about each other, relate to each other, interact with each other? What is he teaching us, which the non-godly community, that is the devilish community, they don't agree with it, they don't do it, they do a different way. And we are from that, and we are becoming something different. So what exactly is the difference? This is the whole subject of the Murli, and it has to do with learning how to arrive at consensus. It's a very deep thing. So, it is here, in this Brahmin family, that you have to fill yourselves with spiritual love for one another. So, here in the Brahmin family, what do we have is lots of difference of opinion, yes? Of course, we are all very different. One of the proof of God is that we can all survive together. Otherwise, we wouldn't, you know? So, within the Brahmin family, we have a lot of karmic accounts with each other, yes? Yes, and so we give each other sorrow. And we take sorrow from each other. And Baba says, don't take sorrow. And you say, I don't know how to do that. So very, very crucial Srimat is, do not take sorrow. And how to not take sorrow is a very, very deep piece of work. So we will do that. So we are learning in this Brahman family to fill ourselves with spiritual love for one another. Those who do not have full love will not be able to claim the full status. So this is something absolutely new, that there is an absolute connection between loving and having status. Status means you are in a position of power and authority. And you can only have that if you are totally loving. So what do you see in people who are in position of power and authority? Are they loving? No. No? How many people have you seen who are in a position of power and authority and at the same time fully loving? Very, very few, you see. So this is why there's only eight, you see. because it's very difficult. This is easy Raj Yoga until you're in a position of power and authority where you have to be fully and completely loving. So this is the aim and object, is to be in position of power and authority. If Baba puts you there, then you have to handle it. And be absolutely loving. So that's why we're here. That's what we're studying. How to be in position of power and authority and totally loving. Never, ever, ever abuse your power and position. Very difficult. But that's what easy yoga is all about. So, Baba says, then, once you've done that, there is one religion and one kingdom. So religion means in Hindi, dharma. And dharma is a much, much wider word than religion. Because in English, religion, when you hear the word religion, you usually think of different religious traditions. The Christian religion, Islamic religion, Buddhist religion, Hindu religion. But dharma is all about how you function in terms of what you think you are and how you think you are. So for example, Baba has said now you are Brahmins, you're Brahmin Dharma. So the Dharma of being a Brahmin has to do with your Dharna. Your Dharna means your inculcation of knowledge, of virtues, and of powers. Because if you don't have power, you can't manage. It's too difficult. So you need power. The eight powers are very good. There's a few more powers, but you need the powers. Otherwise, it's too hard. So dharma means the dharma of real knowledge, deep knowledge, virtues and powers. And so then the kingdom is how things operate when everyone is fully empowered, fully knowledgeable and fully virtuous. That's the kingdom. So they do not quarrel with each other. So there's a very deep connection between being absolutely full of wisdom, virtues, and powers, and being able to work with other people who see things from a different angle, and who have different priorities, and who have a different agenda, different function, different purpose, and still be able to be in perfect harmony. You see? Because harmony is when all the different people are sounding good together, functioning beautifully together, like a garden with all kinds of different flowers looks nice. If there's only one kind of flower, it's a bit boring. In the same way, in BKs, if you had only one type of BK, it'd be dead boring. Right? Yes? So we are very, very different from each other, but we have to shift from being discordant, and discord is another word for conflict. We have to go from discordant to harmonious. You see? So here, there is no kingdom. If you think you're in charge of something, you're not. How many people are in charge of centers? Yes. So you're instrument, right? You're not actually in charge. Because any time you could get a direction from Baba saying, okay, leave that position, then could you say, okay, and walk out? Or would you say, this is my position? No, There is no kingdom here. So there is conflict of opinion because of body consciousness. Body consciousness in this particular case means arrogance. And mostly you will find that arrogance and body consciousness is the same thing. So when you are arrogant, you are arrogant of something. And very often it is you have an idea and you say, this is a good idea, and not only that is my idea, and it's the right idea, and definitely it must be done like that. And then somebody else will come along who's equally enthusiastic about their own idea, which is not the same as your idea. And you have to work together. And one of the ideas has to be done. And nobody wants to give up their idea. This is why you have to do consensus building. Consensus building means you don't do anything until everyone involved agrees. It's a very time-consuming process, so people don't do it, but it is really worth doing. Do you know how to do consensus building? Yes? Only one. So this is a really, really good skill to learn, consensus building. So you can learn about that. Consensus means to arrive at agreement. What we normally have is democracy, which is the majority thinks one way and the minority thinks another way. And so we go according to the majority, and the minority is always a little bit dissatisfied. That's democracy. And Baba is not keen on it. And consensus building is much more difficult than democracy. And so very often in BK, you will hear the recommendation that go with the majority. Right? Have you heard that? Yes? But it doesn't mean that the majority is the best. Sometimes it is. Sometimes not. But if it's really, really a big deal and really big important point, then you may say, okay, what we need to do is some consensus building around this subject so that everyone's on board. And that is really worth doing. So we'll look at that a bit later on. So those who have a conflict of opinion experience punishment before they pass. So what that means is, if you disagree with what you call the system or the yagya or the majority or whatever, and it causes you to start saying bad things about Baba, Baba's system, Baba's elders, all the people, that is what will cause you to experience punishment, because punishment, of course, comes from performing negative karma. So if you disagree with something strongly, that feeling of disagreement may inspire you to get angry, to criticize, to find fault, to encourage other people to also be in conflict with whoever you're in conflict with. And these things constitute negative karma, and it will break your yoga, and it will also put you in debt, for which you will experience punishment, and then you will pass. That means you will leave your body, you will go through the Dharmaraj, you'll go to the soul world, and you'll come back in a lower status. But that's too late by that time. So then when they stay in one religion. One religion means one dharma. One dharma, you know, Baba uses the word ekmat, right? So ekmat means that your angle on life is the same angle as Baba's angle. And that means you see that all the people are souls. There's no male souls and female souls. They're all genderless. And they all reincarnate. And they're all brothers and sisters. Well, actually, they're all brothers when they have bodies as brothers and sisters. And everything starts off at the highest level and it goes gradually down from sato to rajo to tamo. Basically that. So the way you see the world is according to the way Baba has described it, you see. Then we're all on the same page, and that's called one mat. So then there's peace, you see. So if you look at the different conflicts that are going on in the world today, you know, it's either between different religious beliefs or within one religion between different factions according to their slight differences of belief system or how they perform their rituals. And then there are others who have different ideas about what language we should speak, so you get language conflicts. And then who should be living here and who should not be living here. So you categorize people as other. And we are this and they are other. So therefore you make them into non-humans and then you can kill them. Because they reincarnate and come back, so it doesn't really do any good. But once we arrive at the golden age, it is as a result of really deeply inculcating this vision of the soul and knowledge of the Creator and the creation. So we're all agreed that this is like this. So then, Baba says on the other side, here, there is the devilish community, that is, the devilish family types. So Baba talks about family types. And family types may correspond on some level to what we know as personality types. You know, in psychology, you're an alpha male, or I don't know, there's different, you know, types of personality. And so Baba says you could be a devilish family type of person, which means you're very moralistic, you have very fixed ideas, you operate on the basis of prejudice and preconception, and you enforce that with violence, and you justify it as being right way to do things. That's devilish family type. And godly family type, inclusive, loving, you listen to people, everybody has validity, and you don't operate on the basis of preconception, and you don't moralize. You're virtuous and powerful. So, on this side is the godly family type. You are imbibing divine virtues for the future. So while you're imbibing divine virtues, you still have a few insufficiencies or vices or something, and you're gradually neutralizing those and cultivating your virtues. And now divine virtues all come from God. He is called the ocean of virtues. And he has told us that he has distributed different virtues and specialities and talents and so on to different people. So if you think about it like that, that when you look at another human soul, you're supposed to look at them with the third eye. And the third eye is capable of seeing what is non-visible. Now, people's defects are very visible, and you can see them with your two eyes. So Baba has taught us, do not see the obvious, the too obvious, but see what is not obvious, you see, because in every soul there is a virtue, there is a speciality, and not just one, there's several. See that, and do not see the defects. Now that's a huge piece of work, because normally you look at what's visible with your two eyes, and so we have to shut our two eyes while having them open. Can you do that? See but not see. And then look right through the visible, you know, performance of a person to what is deeply behind them, behind that visible bit, which is the gift from God. You see, because everybody has at least one or two or three or 10 or 15 specialities, divine virtues. And defects do not come from God. Defects arise from a number of things. One thing is they arise from your reaction and interpretation to bad things that happen to you, traumatic things that happen to you. That is basically where defects come from. And so we have to become neutral about all the things that made us acquire defects. Defects also arise as our personal power reduces. So by the time you've had 84 births, your purity, peace, power, love, bliss, these five elements of the soul, they will be all the way down to almost nothing. And the space that is left by the loss of those virtues, those qualities, which are effectively the light of the soul, so the space that is left when they are used is dark space, dark energy, and your defects come from there, you see. And therefore, what Baba is suggesting is you remember me and you fill yourself with light, and that will be the best way to reduce the darkness. If you try and fight with the darkness and remove it, that is a complete waste of time. And that is what the devilish community do. They say you shouldn't be this and you shouldn't do that and blah, blah, blah. That's what I call moralizing. It is completely ineffective and counterproductive, therefore not recommended. Okay? Understand? Do you agree? Oh, that's good. Okay, now it's 10:30 and we have done the first section out of 14 sections, so I'm going to go right past those, and all the rest of it is the rest of the Murli. And you see we spent nearly 45 minutes just on 12 lines. And there's so much inside each section. Then we get to the Mite Mite, which you all know what that is, and the blessing and the slogan. Now, the usual way in which people analyze the Murli, which you must have heard about quite a lot, is to divide it up into Gyan, Yoga, Dharana, and Service. Are you familiar with that? Yes? Do you do that? No. Oh. Anyway, you could. It's the easy way. But I'm not going to do that. You can do that. What I'm going to do is just really focus on these 12 lines. And so I already went into quite a lot of detail, but we're going to go into some more detail And if you have a notebook, there are some questions that you can just write down and you can discuss with each other or think about afterwards. So the first thing is this contrast and comparison, because Baba teaches us by showing us one thing and another thing so that we can see the difference between the two. So he tells us, this is body consciousness, this is soul conscious. Can you see the difference? This is blue, this is green. Can you see the difference? So it's all about knowing the difference. And knowing the difference is the function of the intellect. So the intellect at this point in time is unable to tell the difference. So what Baba calls devilish community is people who cannot tell the difference between true and false, logical and non-logical, which becomes blind faith. If you believe in something that you cannot comprehend, that's called blind faith. If you agree to something that is illogical, incoherent, and inconsistent, that means your intellect is not working. So most people's intellect is not working, and Baba's way to get us to get our intellect to work is by seeing the contrast and deciding, is this right or is this right? Figure it out. Once you've decided, you can't change your mind, because if you change your mind, it means you didn't understand. So, the first thing is, what are we? Because we have a big identity issue. What am I? Who am I? So, think about Parivar, Kul, Sampraday. We are all these three. We are a family. We're not a nuclear family. We are a global family. And what makes us a family is that we have the same father and mother. And we are not like normal humans, because our father is a non-human and our mother is an angel. Is that right? Shiv Baba is our father. He's a non-human. And Brahma Baba is our mother. And he's also currently in the angelic form. So your Lokic mother and father are in fact brothers and sisters. And why does Baba tell us this is because you also know another thing that Baba has told us about himself and his relationship with us. He says, I am your father, your teacher, and your Satguru, these three relationships. And these relationships are extremely influential, because a normal human being is what they are because of who their father is, who their teacher is, and who their guru is, because you accept what they say. And now Shiv Baba says, those people, what they have told you was okay, but it's not okay anymore. Because now you have met Shiv Baba. And what they told you was slightly wrong. And because of that, you lost your power, you lost your freedom, and you lost your intelligence. And so now, do you want them back again? This is the question. Do you want your power back? Do you want your freedom back? Do you want your intelligence back? And usually people say, yeah, I think so. Do you want that? Anybody not want it? Not everybody put their hands up. So, what Shiv Baba tells you, first of all, is all of you are my sons. So anybody who's in a girl body, you have to think of yourself as a son of Shiv Baba. Is that okay? Sisters? Yes? TK? You do not have a female soul. There's nothing like that. All souls are sons. Sometimes Baba says, all souls are Sitas. So brothers, are you all brides? Are you all girls? Yes? So he sort of degenderizes us. Yeah. So as Sitas, we belong to Ram. Not that Ram of the Silver Age, but Shiv Baba. You see? So he is the father, teacher, Satguru. He's also the bridegroom. So it's all about that you belong. Belong means that you have rights. It means you have status. And it means, above all, you have an inheritance. So you are extraordinarily wealthy people. Can you feel it? That your father is the owner of the universe. You must never worry about money. Is that right? Yes? Do you worry about money? Who worries about money? Now stop that. Always remind yourself, my father is the owner of the universe. God will provide. But you have to be economical. So he teaches us this, you know, don't waste your money. So this is the thing, that our relationship with each other is based on this, that all of us are the children of Shiv Baba, the non-human owner of the universe, the creator, and Brahma Baba, who is the great-great-grandfather of the world. So we are connected with each other, and we all have rights. We have a right to the inheritance, purity, peace, prosperity. And in order to claim our rights, we have to study. So knowledge is wealth. You know that, right? Knowledge is wealth. The more knowledge you have, the more you will be able to love. And the more you love, the more you will be able to handle power. If you have power, physical power, but you do not have spiritual power, you will mess up. You will abuse your power. You will not do the right thing. But if you have power from Shiv Baba and follow Srimat because of your love, you will do good karma. And when you do good karma, what happens? Other people love you. Simple. Yes, if you do bad karma, will they love you? I don't think so. No. So, then you see this contrast between the godly and the devilish. So, is that okay? Am I going the right speed for the translators? Okay. Now, let's look further at this difference between devilish community and godly community. Because in the world today, there are a lot of people who are engaged in war with each other. There's a lot of violence going on, there's a lot of terrorism, there's a lot of all this type of thing. And all of that is called devilish, because it involves violence. And this is the problem of fanatical religious positioning, that you try to enforce your opinion on other people using violence. You see, this is called devilish. And the godly people, a day will come when it's not possible to speak any gyan. You know? Because somebody will disagree with it. And this is why Baba says, serve with your face, serve with your smile, because all the knowledge is visible in the face of a person who has inculcated the knowledge, who is loving, powerful, peaceful, connected. Everything is visible, right? So this is how we have to become. So the devilish community, in many ways you can say that Baba is really looking at the specific differences between Hinduism and Gyan. And so for people who come into Gyan who do not come from a Hindu background, the contrast is very, very big. And the belief systems are very, very different. And you cannot actually come in Gyan unless you really, really understand each and every point and you agree with each and every point. If you don't agree, you will not come in Gyan. So the number of BKs who come from a non-Hindu background, that will be small number, very small number. Now, between a Hindu belief and Gyan, there's not much difference. It's very, very easy to come in Gyan as a Hindu, because you already know you reincarnate. You already know you're a soul, you know. You already know Shiv Baba, everything. So the difference has to be really thought about deeply. So the main difference is that there are some beliefs of Hinduism which are very opposite of Gyan. Like Shiva and Shankar are the same, that's one belief. Another one like God is omnipresent, another belief. Another one like you will take birth through 8,400,000 species, you see. So Gyan says, no, you're a human soul, you'll always be a human soul. So that's different, that's not Hindu. God is not omnipresent, that's not Hindu. And Shiva is incorporeal and not Shankar. That's different, you see. And then Brahma is this one behind the screen. That's not Hindu. You see, who is this person? Why you put him in the Trimurti? They'll give you trouble for that, you see. But as a non-Hindu, you don't have these kind of problems. So, let's go further. Distinguishing between religion, regular religion, and Srimat. So these are some things that are really important for us BKs. We have to be able to think logically, coherently, and consistently. And those who are in the, you know, kind of rigid-minded religious belief systems, they are unable to think logically, coherently, and consistently, and they have fixed ideas. And so what we have to do is look at ourselves deeply within and see, what are my fixed ideas? And for most of us, I would think that the fixed ideas are to do with your morality, rather than your religious beliefs, because you're already BKs. So think about some of your moral principles and see if they are fixed ideas or whether you have really thought them through. So, let's go further. Implications. So the one thing that Baba has said, you are now in God's family and learning from God how there has to be spiritual love for one another. So I'd like you to write this question down in your notebooks. What is the meaning of spiritual love? Adhyatmik sneh, ruhani sneh, you know. Spiritual love, the love of the soul. That means it's, you have to contrast it with love of the body. And normally, who you love and who you trust is your bodily relations, you see. But spiritual love is nothing like that. Spiritual love is when you can really see the spirit, recognize who is who and what their specialities are. So, because everybody has a different interpretation of spiritual love, you can find confusion, disappointment, disagreement, and plenty of maya. Do you experience that? Yes? Yes, you're not putting your hands up, but I know you do experience this. And this is because you didn't sit down with yourself and define it. And I think it's also a good idea, now you're going to have your lunch time and your afternoon time, and we're going to meet again together at 4:30, but, you know, try to write down in your notebooks what is your definition of spiritual love. And then get together with some other brothers and sisters and see what's the difference between your definition and their definition. And you may find some people have the same idea as you. Some people have a very different idea. And one of the things that creates a lot of confusion and maya and disagreement is when we don't sit down and define, what do I mean by this particular sentence or word or phrase, you see. So spiritual love is not at all clear to most people. And why is because it's very subtle. And how do we figure it out is we contrast it with physical love. Physical love, spiritual love. And then we have to think all the other kinds of love. You can have family love. You can have brotherly love, sisterly love, marital love. Many different kinds of love, you know. And what do you mean by spiritual love? And what do you think Baba means by spiritual love? And you'll find that a lot of people have a lot of different ideas about what they think Baba means. And then you have to go and see Baba and say, okay, Baba, what do you actually mean by spiritual love? And what do you think he will say? Study the Muralis. Because he gives indications. As you continue to go deep and deep into the Murali, you will get his angle on spiritual love. And that's the way that you would know, you see. But I would like you to do that for yourself, because the whole reason why we are here in BK is to learn to interact with each other on the basis, and even interact with your own self. Do you have spiritual love for yourself? Do you love your own soul? You know? So we have to think about that. Then, okay, what is love? So here, Baba tells you a little bit more. It is here, in this Brahman family, that you have to fill yourselves, with spiritual love for one another, and those who don't have full love will not be able to claim the status. So this is another question for you to think about. Discuss the connection between status and spiritual love, you see. So most BKs have a big problem with the idea of status. status, do you? Yes, how many have a problem with the word status? Most people do, yeah? Yes. You say, I'm not here for status, right? But you are. You see? And then you say, no, I'm not. And Baba says, well, you should be. Oh, no, why should I be? You know? So, this is a good piece of Maya for everybody. Status, jealousy, competition, you know. So you're here for a status. This is an education and we're number wise. So, you know, do you want to be number 487? Or number one? You know, we're supposed to go for number one, yeah? Or number two? Is there anybody who's trying to be the last? Now you can't strive to fail. It doesn't work. So you have to think about the connection between status and spiritual love. This is a very, very difficult question to think about. So it's probably a good idea to discuss with two or three people, because then you get several people's heads into it and that may get you going a bit. So try that. Now we go a little bit further. Dharma. What on earth is that? Dharma. So Baba says, anything written in red is a piece from the Murli, right? So there is one Dharma and one kingdom, one Raja and one Dharma. So we know that Lakshmi and Narayan have two crowns. One is the crown of light, which is the crown of Dharma, the crown of purity, the crown of spiritual power. And the other one is the crown political power, the crown of the kingdom. And so the religious and political powers together in one hand, that is superpower. And in the world today, in some countries, like in USA, for example, do we have anyone from USA? Yes. Now you will learn from early school days that the state and the church must be kept separate. They do not want the powers of religion and politics in one hand. That's USA. And in most of the Western countries, they also have this idea that we must keep it separate. In Islam, on the other hand, it must be together. And this is why you have the Sharia system, which is the political and the religious powers in one hand. You see? And so you have this big difference between the East and the West in that area. In India, it's sometimes this, sometimes that. It varies according to who and where. But what Baba is establishing is one religion and one kingdom in the Golden Age. And that is only possible if there is absolute love for the other human. So you have to look at yourself and really see how many times in a day you say something nasty about someone. Two or three? Yes? You criticize someone. That means insufficient love, you see. So the dharma of love is a very, very big deal, you see. And it's quite difficult because you easily can see somebody did something wrong or somebody has a defect or you don't like something, you see, and then you'd speak about it. And that disqualifies you from being in this kingdom of one Dharma and one Raja. You see what I'm saying? Understand? Agree? Will you do it? Very difficult. Okay. So you see these other questions that are under it. What is the meaning of Dharma? So you need to really write it down for yourself, what you think is the meaning of Dharma. And what is the political and social system that Baba is establishing? Because we're practicing in the confluence age and figuring out how to live as an individual within a gathering, how to live so that we can just translate it into the golden age. So I think we have a ways to go, but this is what the confluence age is about. So Baba speaks about monarchy. You have a king and a queen who contain the religious and political powers. So what kind of monarchy? And then, of course, it's asking you, can you renounce democracy? Now, for people who grow up in the West, that's a big question. Because democracy and monarchy are basically opposite. And should you renounce democracy? Now, if you think of BK organization, it is 100% democratic. Yes? Or no? Of course it is. If you go to this NCCC retreat and you deal with boards and trustees and all of that, it's fully democratic because the laws are based in the system of democracy. And the BK system is fully monarchic. So, you have to be a monarchist who can function in a democratic environment. Can you do that? Yes? Or have you never thought about that? What do you think? You have to think about it. Even India is the largest democracy in the world. But the prevailing social attitudes in India are pre-democratic. And so everybody has to operate on a dual system of monarchy and democracy at the same time. And so, can you be an egoless democratic monarch? Yeah, it's a deep question. Because democratic really means that you listen to other people. And you don't just lay down the law with your finger wagging. And it's all to do with love. Who knew Daddy Prakash Mani here? Anybody? Oh, quite a few of you. And so you remember how Daddy used to handle everything. So Daddy was, my word for her is a consultative emperor. And I'm very, very partial to Daddy Prakash Mani's way of running things. She gave everyone autonomy and she listened to what they say. And then she would make a decision which is binding on everyone. And then she would check, do you like this decision? Do you accept this decision? And this is how Dadi maintained unity and love. So, do you like that? That's a question. Do you like that? Can you do that? Because everyone is in charge of something, you know. And so this idea of being a consultative emperor is something that I think is very good to think about and practice, you know. So, what is a BK head of department? You know, in Madhuban we have departments here. And in outside Madhuban you have centers and sub-centers and zones and everything. So it's all about these different pyramid structures. Because human society functions like pyramids. So, what is your personal ethical policy? This is a question to write down in your book. What is your personal ethical policy when you are in a position of power, authority, and responsibility. You have to think about that very, very carefully. How do you conduct yourself? Do you know how to work with people with love? Or do you make slaves? Or do they push you around? You know, because it's a very fine balance. So, here is a very important question. What is better? Is it better to be a powerful soul in a weak position, or a weak soul in a powerful position? What do you think? Who goes for the first one? A powerful soul in a weak position. Okay, there's a few of you, half of you. And so the rest of you, a weak soul in a powerful position, you like that? So how many of you don't know? Half of you is a don't know. Let's try again. Is it better to be a powerful soul? You want to be a powerful soul. Okay. Now, can you handle being in a weak position? That's the problem. You see. But you have a choice. You could be a powerful soul in a weak position, or you could be a weak soul in a powerful position. What is better? Huh? Powerful soul in a weak position? A weak soul in a powerful position. Anyway, I want you to think about that. No, that's not the question. What is a weak soul? Ah, well, that's a very good question. Okay, what is a weak soul? A weak soul is somebody who comes under the influence of vices. That's a weak soul. A weak position is you are not in charge, and you have to do what everybody says. That's a weak position. So, are we in a weak position? On the whole, yes, right? You know. Somebody once asked Daddy Prakash Mani, how do you become Bara? You know, how do you become the big guy? And she gave a wonderful story. There's a word play. You know, in South India, there is a particularly tasty thing to eat called vara. And vara is made of urad dal, you know? And so, how do you become vara? Well, first of all, you have to bake in the sun for a few months while you grow, you know? And then they will cut you down, and they will smash you to get you out of your, you know, little husks and everything. And then they will grind you in the grinder, and they will soak you in the water, and then they will plunge you in boiling oil, and then they will take you out of that, and they will put you in yogurt. And then they put some chili on top, and you're ready to eat. So she said that. Now, if you want to be a really big guy, you have to go through this process. So if you are a powerful soul in a powerful position, you will 100% definitely become corrupt. So is that what you want? Anybody want to be corrupt? No. Okay. One of you. Okay. And not recommended. So, if you don't want to be corrupt, because power makes people greedy, arrogant, dishonest, and abusive. That's what it does. So people want power. But they don't know that it makes you greedy, angry, arrogant, dishonest, and corrupt. So, huh? Power, power, power. Even spiritual power, you know, spiritual power, real spiritual power, a person is not hungry for power. They know, I am powerful. So if you smash me up and soak me in yogurt and put me in boiling oil, it doesn't matter because I'm a powerful soul. So you're not concerned about position, you see. If you are powerful, you see, then Baba will put you in a weak position, of course, because you need to be in a weak position in order to get humility. How do you become humble? The easiest way to become humble is to get unreasonable humiliation. That's a very easy way, and the people around you will be happy to oblige. And so that's a powerful soul in a weak position. See, because if you're a weak soul in a weak position, you'll just fizzle out within 10 minutes. You know, that won't work. Yeah, that's the system. So if you say, oh, I want to be super BK, you see, and then everybody will say, flatten you. You know, so you still want to be a super BK? Yes! And so you need to have yoga, because with yoga you will get power. You get power of tolerance, you get power of accommodation, you get power to face, you get power of discrimination, power to judge, power to cooperate, power to, you know, withdraw, and power to back up, and a few other powers as well. Power of silence, power of transformation, power of love. You need all these things, and then you will be humble and powerful, you see. So if you're a weak soul in a powerful position, everybody likes that, but you will be a horrible person. Do you really want that? Not worth it, you know. So we... Haji? No. Ask yourself, truthfully, am I, you know, Shiv Shakti? Are you combined with Baba or not? Baba is offering, you combine with me, you'll be pretty powerful. And when they start smashing you and boiling you in oil and, you know, soaking you and burning you and all that, well, you're with Baba, so you'll grow, you see. And you'll be able to be in a position of authority, and you will care for the people. Right? Because if you are not humble, you don't qualify for the Golden Age. So this is a very, very important question to consider, and it's very important to know, yes, I am a powerful soul, and if I'm in a weak position, I will learn, you see, because we have to learn many things. And if I get humiliated, it's okay. I will get more humble. So it's all about love and power. So one beautiful thing someone once said about Dadi Prakash Mani, and she was really, really powerful soul. Only a powerful soul can offer love. So if you're weak soul, you keep wanting something, you see. So take a look at the contrast between spiritual power and love, and then physical power. You see, physical power, if you don't have spiritual power, if you're not a humble soul, you will become a tyrant, which is the worst kind of thing anybody could be. Right? It's a really bad thing. But there's many, many tyrants out there, so you don't want that. Now, the next thing we have to look at, Baba said, they do not quarrel with each other. That means we have to really know about conflict resolution. Do you know about conflict resolution? How to handle conflict? Are you afraid of conflict? A lot of people are afraid of conflict. What do they do? avoid. So, ask yourself this question. What is your personal method to handle conflict when it arises? Because it will arise. You do have to handle conflict, but usually people don't know how to handle conflict. They don't like conflict. They say, ooh, oh, it's bad. We don't need conflict, it's bad. But we have to work it through. So in order to become deities who have love, we must be able to manage conflict whenever it comes up. So, conflict resolution, what do you do? Do you avoid? How many avoiders do we have? Yeah, it's a very popular way to handle it. Yeah? Do you manipulate? There's plenty of those as well. Do you have manipulators? Yeah. Threaten. How dare you try and conflict with me? Boom, boom. That's one way to do. Do you cry? Do you blame? Da-da-na-na-na-na-na. Or do you go to a didi or a daddy with complaints? You know, this is a usual way to handle conflict, and it does not work, you see. So, you can see why we must figure out a policy for ourselves about conflict resolution, and we have to see, how do I do it now, and is there a better way? Because there will be conflict, no matter how you want to position yourself. So, what Baba suggested is that here there are no kingdoms. Of course, everybody liked there to be kingdoms, but there aren't. And Baba says, even among Brahmins too, there is conflict of opinion because of body consciousness. So body consciousness is the same as disagreeing with each other. What do you think? Yes or no? That's what Baba's saying. If you disagree with each other and you come to blows, that's called body consciousness. Anger, arrogance, whatever. So body consciousness is my way, not your way. And what else is this form of body consciousness, arrogance or ego? So our big thing that we're trying to become free from is arrogance and ego and body consciousness. So this is our big challenge. All of us, nobody is exempt from this. So this is why Baba says we have to have love and humility, because then the ego gradually goes. So what happens next? Baba says, those who have a conflict of opinion, this is supposed to be in red, but I didn't put it in red. Those who have a conflict of opinion experience punishment before they pass, and then when they stay in one religion there is peace, but of course they're in a low status. So on the one hand you say, well, I'm not concerned with status, but then on the other hand you go to the golden age in a low status, you will feel, that's not fair. Why is that? You will know why, but it'll be too late to do anything about it. So this question that you must think about is, why is there punishment upon having a disagreement? It's really to do with our behavior when we find ourselves in a conflict of opinion, you see. So we have to think about this. So now let's look a little bit at consensus building. This is the thing which I feel this Murali is all about, teaching us to learn how to work it out with each other and build consensus. So how do you arrive at consensus with your colleagues at the center, your brothers and sisters at the center, where number one, they do not want to sit down and discuss? Have you experienced that? Yes, they will avoid, they will not sit down and discuss. They do a filibuster. You know, a filibuster is quite a good word. A filibuster means they keep talking until there's no more time left. And then you never get to discuss, because they just talk. They force their opinion on you. Do you experience that? Yeah. They shame you. They try and make you feel bad. They make out that you are completely stupid. Yes? And they give you put down. Yes? So this is how difficult it is to even begin to get consensus, because the people don't want to sit down and discuss, and they force their opinion and they shame you and all these things. So what to do, you see? Because this is a real serious challenge that we have personally, you see. And why do we have this challenge? Because we are weak in certain areas. And when we are weak in certain areas, drama will give us something to make us really notice that, oh my goodness, I am weak in this area, I don't know what to do, I am failing, everything is going wrong, help, you know? And so Baba is saying, learn how to deal with, how to face, how to work out a situation where you can sit down and build consensus. So, before destruction at the moment, as you know, is being continuously postponed. Baba wanted, the first date of destruction was 1937, and that didn't work. Then we had 1976, that passed. And then we had, I don't know, a lot of people thought destruction in 2000, that passed. Then we had 2012, that passed. I don't know what's the latest figure, but yeah, maybe 2037, 100 years, you know. But anyway, before destruction, all BKs must know how to arrive at consensus. Do you agree? Yes. All BKs must be able to love each other. Do you love all the other BKs? Mostly? Yeah. We must be able to love each other. We have to renounce criticizing each other. Can we do that? That's very difficult. Do you want to do that? A lot of people are not willing to renounce criticizing, I see. But we need that. All BKs must learn to see each other's specialities. You need the third eye for this, you see. And I would suggest avoid being a moralist. This is the finger-wagging type, you know. If you notice your finger wagging, put it down. That's not good. Because otherwise we would need a few more lives before Satyuga can come. And I don't know how many more lives we have. So all this, you see, you can extract from the first 12 lines of the Murli. Now, Baba said, all of these things that we're doing here and now, what we're learning here and now, is so that we can live in peace in the Golden Age. So, question, what is peace in the Golden Age? So, remember this point, that your status and position in the Golden Age is according to, or determined by, your ability to discuss and negotiate workable agreements with your BK colleagues. Can you do that? This is what makes you have status and achieve consensus on all the matters that people disagree on. So if you have a lot of disagreements, that's great, because that's your challenge, which offers you the possibility to work it out. And if you don't have that opportunity, you wouldn't develop the skill. You see, these are really, really good skills to have. You have a question? Baba said in the Murli today, the ones who come late will go in the Silver Age. But also, what Baba has said is everyone comes at the right time. So Dadi Janki was really worried about the fact that she came 6 months late. You know, so all of us are very late in comparison with that. But what did she do? She asked Baba, what can I do to catch up because I came very late, 6 months after the others? Now we came years after the others, you see. But what Baba told her is study the Muralis. Read the Muralis over and over and really study the Muralis because this is what will make you catch up, you see. So if you don't study, then you go to the Silver Age. But if you study and you know that the Muralis that we study is the last 5 years of Brahma Baba's life, you see. So that's about 365 multiplied by 5, right? So that's something like 2,000 Muralis. That's doable. Sakar Muralis, 2,000. Avyat Muralis, quite a lot, you know. But it's doable. And just to come to class and study the Murali every day and take, you know, our whole morning we have spent on 12 lines of the Murali. And there's 14 times that amount, you see. And there's about, in every Murali, there's about 300 interesting points to churn on. And all of us will select different points to churn on. But Baba knows how much food for thought to give us, all of us, so that each one of us will have at least one interesting point to churn on. And when we churn on the Murali, or on the section of the Murali that is of interest to us, this is what sustains us. This is what inspires us. This is what causes our intellect to work and for us to appreciate what is Baba doing for us in our studies and how he is teaching us to love ourselves, to love him, to love each other, and to love the drama. And this is what makes us move forward. So, don't worry about being late. We're all late, but catch up. Now, one little thing that I personally use to achieve consensus and agreement, which is quite a big personal discipline, and I call it no gas. And I use it whenever we do what's known as dialogues. And dialogue is when you have a maximum of 44 people discussing something until you arrive at consensus. It's a really, really good system. But there are four rules. And the first one is no generalizations. And you can observe yourself and see if and when you actually use generalizations. So a generalization is like all BKs wear white. Well, some of them don't. Right? So anytime you say all or always or never or no one, it's a generalization. You know, or all French people love Camembert cheese, you know. There may be some who don't. You know, so anytime we say a generalization, it will be untrue. But the thing is, most of us have the habit of using generalizations quite a bit. And we don't realize, and I find when I'm conducting dialogues that if I'm the facilitator and I tell them, if you break any of these rules, I will draw it to your attention and request you to rephrase your statement so that it's not a generalization or an accusation, you know, out comes the wagging finger. You always, you never, you did this, you are, don't love me anymore, whatever. Any kind of accusation is not good communication style. But it's very, very common to accuse people. You either accuse them in front of their face or behind their back. So observe yourself, your thinking, your speaking, to what extent and under what circumstances and who do you accuse about what, you know. And then when you notice it, try and rephrase it so that it's not an accusation, but you still communicate what you want to say. Also, it's not a generalization, but you still communicate what you want to say. The third one is no speculation. We do a lot of speculating. You know, well, you see, this person did this and it means that. Maybe, maybe not. You don't know. You have to ask them. You know? Oh, you didn't answer my email, that means you don't care about me. No, maybe they didn't get it. Maybe it wasn't the right email ID. You know, there could be many reasons, but find out. If you find yourself speculating or going along with somebody else's speculations, you'll be going off on a wrong track. It will not take you to the truth. And you can't achieve consensus if you're dealing in untruth. You see, you have to deal in truths. And no speeches. Speeches when you say the same thing 15 times, trying to impose it on somebody, make them accept what you say. Speech, you know. So when we do these four things, it causes us to do a lot of giving and taking of sorrow. That means using these four is not love. And we cannot, you know, come into a golden aged kingdom if we are doing this. So this is a dharma to work on in one's own self. Now, Baba talked about personality types, you see. He said, on the one side here, there is the devilish community that is the devilish family type, you know. So, devilish family type is kind of bossy, arrogant, sexist, authoritarian, fixed ideas, and unable to hear what you are saying. This devilish family type. How many of us do that? A little bit, yeah? Yeah. So if you notice anything like that in yourself, you may want to try to not do that, because that puts you in devilish family type. So you have to ask yourself, are you a godly family type or a devilish family type? Because when we come in Gyan, we come from the devilish world, naturally, with anger, greed, attachment, ego, whatnot. And we are learning how to live together with love, listen to each other, come in harmony with each other, love people who are totally different from yourself, live together with people who have different taste, different attitude, different preferences, you know. So there's a lot to work out. And that's why the consensus building is really helpful. So it all depends on you. Now, one thing that people don't realize is this. Can you pay the price of somebody else's karma? Somebody else does something wrong, will you pay? Anybody? Will you pay somebody else's karma? No, eh? Can somebody else pay the price for your bad karma? Not at all. Now, there's a wonderful expression that you must learn. Tumhara kya jata hai. If somebody does bad karma, what do you lose? What do you lose by some? You see, this is the moralistic people. They don't want anybody to do any bad karma, as if they lose something. You don't lose anything. You have to be able to separate yourself from someone else and their negative karma. One of the key aspects of moralistic religiosity is to try to take the law into your own hands and force people to do or to not do whatever it is they're doing or not doing, you see. And so very often Baba would use this expression, tumhara kya jata hai, means what is it of yours that is getting lost by somebody else doing some bad karma? Nothing. So at that time we have to be detached. You don't have to, or if you do, not more than once. Otherwise you get into the fanatic religious types, which is not what Baba is teaching. Can you speak a little louder? Well, you know that. You know to give good wishes. So, but what I'm saying is, if you have a habit, which many people do, of correcting people, you may remember years ago, Baba gave a Srimat, it is not your duty to correct people. Of course, that Srimat got deleted, but it was there. So the question is, what will you do? What will you do? So, I think you need to pay full attention to perform the best karma possible under the circumstances, because your function in the confluence age is to create pure karma. And whatever anybody else is doing, that's none of your business. Right? Or wrong? Really it is. A very interesting thing. Consider everything around you to be 3D wallpaper. You are in the middle of your drama, and everything that you can see around you is actually drama. It's like 3D wallpaper. Do you caution your wallpaper? I don't think so. So what you need to do is not pay attention to the wallpaper and get on with your spiritual efforts. Because if somebody else is doing wrong things, some small wrong thing, that's not your problem. When you focus on other people, you neglect your own efforts. This is a very important thing to bear in mind. And so get on with your spiritual efforts. Above all, do not take sorrow. Very important, Srimat. Do not take sorrow and pass with honor. Okay? Not pass with then take punishment, but pass with honor. Okay, now I'm going to play you a little movie which is 4 minutes long. Do we have sound? Suresh Bhai, my movie is coming on. Let's see if I can make it work. Okay? Amrit Vela? No. Okay, that's the end of the PowerPoint. And we have just a little time, and we can, how do I do, turn off the screen? Maybe if we can have one more microphone, perhaps you may have some questions. I wanted to leave a little bit of time for your questions, and then this afternoon we're going to go into some, you know, interpersonal work. We meet together again at 4:30. So let me see if any of you have any questions here. Anybody? No? Yes. So if you come to the front, and anybody else who has a question, you can come also, and we'll just see if we can carry this forward.
Om Shanti.
Om Shanti. Can you introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Laura. I'm from Israel. First of all, thank you for the really, really special and clarifying class. And
thank you.
At the bottom of the of this class is, was not to take sorrow, but how to practice this,
how to reinforce to not take this, sorrow.
If you can explain this.
Okay, well, you do take sorrow, and so whatever it is that you're doing, and Baba will say, do not do that. If you respond to it in your mind does not know the difference between do it and don't do it. Your mind can't do that. Just the possibility of sorrow coming in your mind, and your mind will take it, you see, because you receive the sorrow in your mind. So how to not take sorrow is you have to intercept it. And last time when I was in Israel, there was a bit of a war going on, and they had an amazing system for intercepting rockets that were being sent there for blowing the city up, and it was called the Iron Dome. Anybody here from Israel? You are, so you know this. So you have to really establish a system in your soul of the Iron Dome, because it works really, really well. So you have a rocket coming this way, which is some sorrow is coming along your way, you see. And what you have to do is send another rocket to knock it out before it actually hits you. Now, rockets fly at a certain number of miles an hour, but words, thoughts, actions, they are instant, you see. So if somebody gives you sorrow, you have very little time between them giving it to you and you sending another rocket to intercept it. So first of all, we have to be very, very fast. Because you have to be instantaneous in your response, which means you have to prepare yourself in advance. Now, when somebody gives you sorrow, it's usually not the first time, right? You're used to them. You say, under this type of circumstance, they will definitely say something, do something, or whatever, which is calculated to make me take sorrow, and it works every time. Yeah? That's the usual thing. So, you know in advance what they're going to do, how they're going to do, and they get you every time. So you have to be faster, better than that. You see, so it's like tennis. You know, if you watch Wimbledon tennis, those serves, they're running at several hundred miles an hour. And the person at the other end has to, you know, hit it back. So they have to be fast. So if you want to be a really good Raj Yogi, you have to be world class, fast responder to the sorrow that people send in your direction. And they will give you plenty of opportunity for practice, right? And so you have to take some time in advance of them giving you sorrow, because you know where you're weak, you see, and they know where you're weak. And so if you have a big hole in your defenses, they're going to hit you there. They're not going to hit you where you're strong. They're going to hit you where you're weak. So you know that in advance. So you say, okay, I have to position myself differently. And so what Baba tells us is, sit on your seat of self-respect. So you just take a seat in the front so that you can give your question. Ben? Yes, okay. What you do is, you sit on your seat of self-respect, and your seat of self-respect, you see, if somebody gives you sorrow, they might give you sorrow by saying, you are a complete waste of time, a total idiot, and I don't like you. Something like that. And you say, well, you see. So what you have to do is say, you know what, you're welcome to your opinion. Nothing to do with me. I'm very, very clear that I'm very intelligent, I'm being taught by God himself, and I'm very necessary because he wouldn't have chosen me otherwise, so have a nice day. Can you do that? So practice that, or create some other little system, but have a nice day is a very, very good expression to not take sorrow. It's like you give it back. And it's very diplomatic, it's quite pleasant, there's nothing wrong with telling people to have a nice day. It's not like telling them to, you know, something that we wouldn't want to say in, on camera. But you know what I'm saying? And it all has to do with you moving off your seat of self-respect. As soon as you're not on your seat of self-respect, you're no longer in your position of authority, and you're no longer aware of your value, you see. And so it means you had a moment of body consciousness, a moment of weakness, and they hit you right there because they are snipers and they know exactly when to pull the trigger, and you have to have your defense. Drama is one defense. And turn it around. Power to transform is a very, very good way. So there are many, many yuktis, but you can try. Now, other sister also had a question. Can you come and ask it? Yes.
Om Shanti, Brother Vipin from Mauritius. Baba said the Muli imbibe divine virtues. What is the difference between virtues and
divine virtues?
Yes.
Okay. So what I think we should do in our minds is decide for ourselves that virtues come from God. And so all virtues are divine virtues. And God has given us some virtues. He's given other virtues to other people. Baba is himself the ocean of virtues, right? You can see it in some muralis where he says that. And so all the specialities, virtues, qualities, virtues especially, that we have, we need to consider that they are gifts from Baba. And so whatever he has given us, we have to cultivate it. And then we also observe Baba talking about things and displaying different virtues in himself, but also there are other people to whom he has given virtues, divine virtues. And any time you see a quality of someone He has said, do not get impressed by it or overwhelmed by it, but just know, look, Baba has given this person a very nice virtue, and I would like to have that virtue too. So watch how they use their virtue and start to emulate that and cultivate that within yourself. And it will also help you with the process of not taking sorrow, because taking sorrow is when we have a defect or a lack of a virtue. But I personally think that we should actually stay away from values. But values are very popular among BKs. You're always talking about values, right? But if you analyze values, what you will find is that they're like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Those are values. And values tend to have nationalities and religions. You talk about Christian values, Jewish values, American values, British values, you know. And values are very divisive, because somebody has this value according to their religion or nationality, which is contrasted with some other people who they say they don't have these values because they're not Christians or they're not Americans or whatever it happens to be. And that's called values. It's not values. It's not like virtues. Values are like foreign exchange. You know, how many dollars for a rupee? Yeah. This is values. And people are really into values, but I think that it's much, much better to be into virtues, because virtues do come from God. Values come from people. And so virtues, to me, virtues is much more close to Srimat. And values is much more like Paramat. So I personally feel that we should stop getting so into values and start getting much more into virtues. Because there is nothing like universal values. You cannot have a value that's universal, because it's inconsistent, incoherent to talk about that. But a virtue which comes from God is beyond value. It's extraordinarily valuable. And if you place value on virtues and stay away from these values that people talk about, I think you will find yourself much more successful in your spiritual practice, because you don't want to have something that belongs to a section of humanity as opposed to another section of humanity. Example, well, you have people say that value is to consider that anyone who's older is wise. You see, that's a value. Older people are wise. Now, some of them are, but not all of them. You see. So if you say, it's like moral values. In morality, males are more valuable than females. But if you look at the reality, you will find there's some valuable males and some valuable females and some less valuable males and some less valuable females. So this idea that if you are in a male body, that's more valuable by definition, that's completely untrue, and that's fabricated by humans. You see? That's an example of moral value, you see? And so what I'm saying is, you have to check that if what people are telling you is true or not. and you have to check it against Srimat, you see. And Srimat doesn't say any of those things, you see. Srimat says, you're a soul, you don't have any age, and you don't have any gender. So a lot of values are age-biased and gender-biased, but it's made up by people. And everybody said yes, 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 without thinking whether it's true or not. But it's not true, you see. So you have to check. Sometimes Baba says in the Murli that there are some younger ones who have very good ideas. You should listen to them. But sometimes people with age value refuse to listen to someone because they're young, therefore they're stupid. Excuse me, they might not be. You know? Please. So this will have to be the last one, yeah. Is it on? Is it switched up? No, is the button switched in the up position? Yeah, okay.
Lebo from South Africa.
Say again, I couldn't.
Lebo from South Africa.
Okay, hi.
All right. Even though you mentioned that we shouldn't be impressed, but I'm quite intrigued by your level of intelligence on how you unpack the Murli. So my question is, can we have a way of understanding when we read the Murli? Because even though I do understand the Murli, but how you explained it today, it actually gave me another perspective on how to. So is there a way that can help to unlock the intellect when you are studying the Murli?
Well, thank you. I think the best way to develop your intelligence is to study the Murli by going over it and over it and over it and over it many, many times. And another thing that is really helpful for us, you know, Baba makes us into student teachers, right? All of us, as soon as we start the course, you know, we process that, and then pretty quickly in the center they say, go and explain the pictures to somebody, or go and explain this, or tell the Murli points. They always ask us to repeat what we heard. And if you just repeat it like a parrot, that's a bit waste of time. But you have to really understand it. And if you have to explain it to somebody, that is a very good incentive to actually develop yourself, because you can't explain something to somebody if you don't understand it. And when you explain something to someone, they may ask you questions that you hadn't asked yourself. So then you have to think about that. So I think that to put yourself in a position where you do have to share the knowledge with someone else, this is why we have Gyan, Yoga, Dharana, service. So service is really explaining the knowledge to another person. And it makes you have to study. And when you read the Murli once, you can do it 20 minutes. Read it a second time, it'll take longer, because your focus of attention will wander. And as you continue to read the Murli 3 times, 4 times, 5 times, you will actually have to force yourself to concentrate, because you will notice that there is an energy inside you, the energy of getting distracted, and you have to go against that energy and cultivate your power of concentration in that way, you see. So a very, very good method is to get yourself, I mean, as we can see from today, it's going to take the whole day to analyze 1 page of the Murli, and there are 3 pages, you know. And so you can see that you can't do this every day for every Murli. But when you do it once or twice or so, for a Murli, you really dedicate a free day for a Murli, you take so much, you begin to realize how much there is in it, and you realize that mostly we listen to the Murli on a daily basis very superficially. But once you've started to, you know, massage it and knead it and go through it from many different angles, it starts to come alive and you start to see how it falls into patterns and energies. And sometimes, you know, Daddy Jenki used to explain to us that Baba's the ocean. So on the top of the ocean you have these little waves. You go further down, you've got these currents, big currents of ideas that are there that you can work with. And then when you get to the bottom of the ocean, that's where you find the jewels. And so when you're churning the points, it takes you through these levels, and ultimately, see, because the Murli is the foundation of our yoga. You can't have yoga without the Murli. You don't just sit there, I'm a peaceful soul, that's boring. You have to go deep and actually get what is Baba saying so that you can experience the feeling of the meaning of what he's saying, you see. And when you do this, you find you get better, you know, because every single person has the potential to be very intelligent. And what stops us is that we don't learn how to think. And so the Murli, when you work with it like this, it does actually teach you how to think. And when you get yourself into difficult situations with people, you know, this is all practice. How to explain, how to respond, how to handle the difficulties. And each time you do this, whether you fail or whether you succeed doesn't matter, you get an opportunity to practice, and that hones your intelligence and develops your concentration, and then you will feel that you're achieving progress. You see, and this feeling of achieving progress is very essential in BK life, because otherwise you get distracted by distractions. One thing Daddy had said, which stuck with me, was very important. She said, there's three kinds of people. The best kind of people, they talk about ideas. The second best people, they talk about events. What happened? And the third kind of people, they talk about people, otherwise known as gossiping. So what we need to do is try to catch the ideas. Om Shanti.
अब तुम्हें